Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Welcome to episode number 72 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today we're going to be talking about, meaty magazines. Not that fluff stuff anymore. How about ones with a lot more substance to them? Before we start the episode, I want to make sure that you know that this episode is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to please, please, please hop on over to iTunes after the episode. Rate and review this podcast. I absolutely love to hear from you. The feedback just makes my day. Love to know what's on your mind. So hop on over to iTunes after the episode, and then I'll be tuning in to you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
I read an article in the New York Times recently, and it said, "These women's magazines aren't just for women." And it's all about the fact that, well, maybe magazines about women, for women, don't just have to be about fashion ads or how to drop a few pounds. How about some more substance? So I decided to bring on board Jillian Goodman, publisher, who has a fantastic background. She is a graduate of Harvard and editor at Bloomberg Businessweek and has previously held editorial positions at Fast Company and New York Magazine. Now, what she's doing right now is she's working with a fabulous group called Mary Review. This one particular magazine was reviewed in this New York Times piece, which was all about why do we always have to be reading magazines, women for women, but why don't men read some of these magazines too to learn more about women and more substantive issues than just the usual fluff? I was really relieved to hear that there's really been a groundswell, a movement toward a lot more, as it were, meatiness and meaningfulness in new publications like Mary Review. So, Jillian, welcome to the Her podcast. And I think we all want to hear a lot more about not just Mary Review, but this whole revolution that's taking place.
Yeah, well, you know, to start out, I think it's important, you know, not to malign women's magazines as such, or even women's magazines insofar as they tend to be focused on weight loss and celebrity dating and stuff like that. There's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. What's wrong is the idea that that is the only thing that is targeted at women, and that, you know, from the standpoint of a writer, that's, you know, if you're a magazine writer who's a woman, it's, you know, often difficult to get published outside of these places. And so that leads to a media environment that is dominated by, you know, the majority point of view, and which is detrimental to women.
Okay. And, you know, I think, you know, your point is extremely well taken, and that is, you know, all of these magazines, you know, have their role, as it were. No question about that. So tell us what Mary Review does, for instance.
Yeah, so we are, our tagline, I've said it many times, so it will sound rehearsed because it has been. We are a magazine of news and ideas written and produced entirely by women. That's nonspecific on purpose. We publish a variety of different types of stories on a variety of different topics. Our inaugural issue had a whole lengthy story about going to the Miss America competition. We also had a story about resistance fighters in Ukraine. So, you know, all of these things can exist in a magazine. They're all produced by women. And I hope that, you know, the idea was to create a product with enough, you know, diversity of stories and, you know, storytelling techniques and storytellers that it would appeal beyond simply an audience of women and expose a larger group to the work of this, you know, of these women who produced it.
Well, I found it interesting that you have a male readership of about 30%. Now, did that surprise you?
I mean, it was no, I guess. And, you know, for the sake of accuracy, that was, I think our donor base was about 30% male, which is, you know, about what I was hoping for. You know, I was hoping that by putting together, as you call it, you know, a meaty lineup, that we would have a broad appeal. And so I can't say it surprised me because it was, you know, by design.
How interesting. And so how do you differentiate yourself from some of the other ones out there? You know, the Riveter, Gentlewoman, the Establishment. You know, there's been so much going on. Are people going into specific kind of almost sectors or categories, or how is this working?
Yeah, I mean, I think each of these, each of the magazines that were profiled in that piece kind of has its own particular take. I don't want to speak to the mission of anyone else's publication because I certainly don't know it as intimately as they do. But I know, you know, for us, the mission was informed by my background, having worked in media. You know, I know that, for instance, The Gentlewoman has a little bit more of a fashion and style spin than we do. I think The Riveter, at least as insofar as I understand it, is more explicitly targeting an audience of women. But that said, you know, the gradations here are definitely fine. And I think that, you know, there's plenty of room for publications that are trying to, you know, be a little bit more serious and promote women's voices, which speaks to the lack of women's voices in the mainstream market.
Yeah, in that mainstream market, it was also mentioned in the article that VIDA count, that's VIDA count, this is an annual statistical roundup looking at magazines, for instance. According to the organization's most recent statistics, about 70% of bylines in The New Yorker and The Atlantic were men in 2015. 55% of the New Republic's bylines were those of men, a marked improvement from about 80% in 2011. Few women make it to the reporting or feature writing finals of the National Magazine Awards. Do you see that changing?
I mean, you see it changing in fits and starts, sort of incrementally. And I think it's also... But, you know, it's hard. I mean, especially in an industry where you are living and dying on your ideas and trying to sell those ideas, you know, more specifically your ability to sell those ideas. It's harder to sell your ideas to someone who sort of is coming at them differently. And I think, you know, I don't want to, you know, paint all women with the same brush, but, you know, insofar as women are similar to each other, they're more likely to, you know, see where you're coming from. And so, you know, the more women we can get rising up through the ranks of magazines, the more women will be represented in those magazines. But obviously, you know, that is not a process that can be measured in the course of individual years. You know, you're almost talking about a generational process. Now, you know, obviously there are steps that can be taken on a shorter time scale than that. But as far as, you know, a real sea change, yeah, I think we've still got a ways to go.
It's interesting. You're the founder of Mary Review.
Mm-hmm.
See if I got this right. You raised your first funding on Kickstarter, and you published your first issue last fall. And you said, "It just blows my mind how hard it is to get certain outlets to listen." What did you mean by that?
Sort of what I was just talking about, actually, that it's hard. It can be, you know, it's just hard to tell a story, and it's hard to be more specific in that because you never know what's going on in someone else's head, right? So it makes it that much harder to advocate for yourself because you think, you know, maybe that idea just wasn't good. You know, it plays tricks with your mind almost. And so what I wanted to do was create a space where that question, at least, you know, was eliminated. And I could look for those stories that I knew, or that I thought suspected would be more difficult to place. You know, for instance, that Miss America story that I discussed, that was a story that, you know, I'd really wanted to exist for some time. And I'd actually pitched that to a couple of different places as something that I might write. And, you know, and it had not been accepted. And so I was eager, you know, in starting this, I thought it was a story that should exist. And so it was a real priority for me to find a writer and get that in the magazine. And the woman who did it, Kathleen Hale is her name, just did such a terrific job. And, you know, I felt really vindicated because, you know, I couldn't have been more thrilled with the work she did.
Excellent. And now flashing forward, that was your first issue was in the fall. What have you learned since then? Because it's a number of months now.
Yeah, so many things. I mean, the whole process of putting it together was, a real learning experience. I mean, I have a background as an editor. I do not have a background as a publisher. And so all of that has been new to me. And it's a really, really different point of view. It's a really different way that you have to approach, how you think about what an organization is, like what this publication is, means something different to me, you know, when I'm trying to think about, okay, how are we going to raise money and do it again than it did when I was thinking, like, what's going to be in it? What does this mean? What does this stand for? So, you know, I've learned a lot about that and everything down to, you know, I had to figure out how to get a barcode. I had to figure out, you know, I didn't realize that we were going to have to charge sales tax, so I had to get a sales tax ID. And so they're, you know, learning experiences, both large and small, you know, like learning, you know, I always knew the value of copy editors, you know, working with them in my, you know, regular professional life. But, you know, you find out all over again, you know, how important each of those individual parts of the magazine production process is.
Have you had big surprises, good, bad, or otherwise, with this? Like, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
It's really hard to separate the big surprises from the little surprises because they all, you know, at least in the moment, they're all so important. You know, everything from, like, I had no idea it would be so difficult to get a barcode, you know, to, you know, what a terrific thing to be able to be featured in the New York Times and you know, just to see that happen. So, I don't know. It's hard to say what's a big surprise.
And what are your dreams for this? What are your goals for Mary Review?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love just to keep publishing stories that I'm excited about, stories by people with a real voice, a real point of view, with real skills that maybe aren't being exploited to the extent that they should be. Writers who are not getting placed in The New Yorker, who are not getting placed in The Atlantic, but who are so smart. I think that, as media has, shifted and fragmented, one of the things that's gotten lost is, or not lost per se, but one of the things that's gotten more rare is the opportunity to be edited and for someone to really, spend a lot of time with your piece. And that was, that's one of the parts of the job of an editor that I really enjoy doing most. And so I'd like to be able to do that again. I'd like to be able to pay people more. That's a goal as well. But
that's always the goal. You want to get the money in the first place and then the mm-hmm. rest of it kind of rolls out. I have an interesting question. You know, it says Mary Review is a female-produced magazine. What's the difference between a female-produced magazine and a male-produced magazine?
I mean, I think that it's a distinction without a difference on the one hand, because, you know, I always wanted someone to open this and not think about gender. But on the other hand, you know, as we were sort of discussing before, the differences are off almost subliminal, you know. And, you know, I want someone to open this and be able to absorb it and, you know, maybe it changes the way they look at things. Maybe it changes the way they think about women who do pageants. You know, maybe it changes the way they think about conflict, you know, thinking about, you know, women who, you know, I mentioned the story about resistance fighters in the Ukraine. Opens on a scene with a woman who's, you know, making camouflage gear for her son who's fighting on the front lines. And so maybe think, you know, differently about, you know, the way that conflict is affecting people and the people who are involved in that kind of conflict. You know, one of the things I wanted to include stories about global conflict in the magazine, because one of my big frustrations is every time I see a story about Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, any conflict, it'll be about a general or a police captain or, you know, a warlord of some sort. And they're all men. And those are not the only people who are involved in these conflicts. Another story that I assigned and put in the magazine with that in mind was we have a story about a recording artist named Heli Love, and she is Kurdish by background and has, you know, made a reputation for herself in Kurdistan as this singer of very patriotic pro-Kurdish pop anthems. And so to tell a story about what's going on in that part of the world, about conflict in that part of the world and sort of like culture clash that didn't involve, you know, that wasn't about a general, that was about a different side of culture and could be about a woman.
You know, I think that point is extremely well taken, because go figure, when they have so many of these pictures of the global conflicts, no matter where they are, it's always mm-hmm. women weeping over the coffins.
Sure.
Or the dead bodies. It's the woman holding the whatever, you know, the baby mm-hmm. or the kid or even her husband's head, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, as she's cradling him when he's sick or dying or dead or back and forth, but not a mm-hmm. word about her experience, her
right.
journey.
Or her,
you know,
influence,
it's like, wait a minute.
Even.
Yeah. I mean, like, what? Are you kidding me? And then this is why it's so terribly important to make certain that we understand the extraordinary strength of these women mm-hmm. to be able to endure this level of horrific, unconscionable stress.
Mm-hmm.
And to honor it, honor this journey by just saying something about it, for mm-hmm. God's sake, you know,
right.
not just,
yeah.
you know, seeing a picture here, there, and everywhere,
yeah.
you know?
Well, and to honor
when
it,
you think about
too,
it.
Yeah, absolutely, and to honor it, too, by giving it the kind of attention that's not about her gender, that treats her as an individual with agency, an individual with, you know, strength, whether or not she's a woman, you know, no matter who she is. So I think that's important as well.
Oh, what is the name of that young woman who won the Nobel?
Malala,
who was shot in the head.
Yes.
Yeah, here's another example. I mean, just, you know, priceless strength mm-hmm. to go through something like that and then to be so absolutely articulate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And to really be selfless as she tries to continue to message this and influence that community. It's just, you know, where are the other stories about that?
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
there are stories. You
exactly.
know what I mean? And that's why I'm glad that Mary Review is there. So what is the best way for someone to support Mary Review?
Yeah, it's been, you know, I've gotten a lot of really nice feedback from people, and it's, you know, it's wonderful to know that people are reading it, and, you know, not just for me, but for the people who contributed to it. I think, though, you know, we're a print magazine, for one thing, and for another thing, you know, I mentioned before being able to pay people, and that is really important for the production of quality journalism. And so, you know, quality journalism is not free. It does cost money. And so, you know, if someone is really interested in supporting the magazine and wanting to see, you know, things like this, you know, not just us, but other things continue to exist, is really, like, you know, it sounds crass, but really putting your dollars forward, you know, like putting your dollars, you know, buy a copy. I would love for the people listening to this to buy a copy. You can get it online at maryreview.com/support. You know, the people, you know, doing this requires time, requires skills. And while people are putting their time and skills towards these things, they also need to pay their rent and buy their groceries. So that, you know, really, as you know, it's existentially important.
Okay, so everyone out there in her podcast land, that's maryreview.com/support. I mean, go through, obviously, the whole online, but yes, really support this, because I personally, as a writer also, am horribly biased toward, you know, getting meatier magazines, magazines with much greater expansion and breadth of their coverage, certainly of the female experience globally. And I went through the website, Jillian, and it was just fabulous. I did not even know you existed until this New York Times piece. Now I do, and I'll spread the word, and we're doing it right here on the podcast as a start. But again, maryreview.com, and we've been talking to Jillian Goodman, who is the founder and publisher of this wonderful magazine. Please, please, please support it. By purchasing, you know, a copy and, you know, getting the word out there, because this is a great gift. Hey, there's an idea, a gift.
Yeah.
Jillian, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast. I really appreciate that. And good luck in your wonderful work and messaging such meaty work.
Thank you so much.
Least. All right. Everyone, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. Take, oh, just a few seconds to rate and review this podcast on iTunes, because I love to hear from you. Your feedback is golden. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.